phasers for stun and prepare for warp speed. It's time for the We Got the Geeks movie talk.
What have I to fear?
The Avengers. That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team. Earth's mightiest heroes type thing.
Yes. I've met them.
Yeah. Takes us a while to get any traction, I'll give you that one. But let's do a head count here. Your brother, the demigod. A super soldier, a living legend who kind of lives up to the legend. A man with breathtaking anger management issues. A couple of master assassins. And you, big fella. You've managed to piss off every single one of them.
That was the plan.
Not a great plan. When they come, and they will, they'll come for you.
I have an army.
We have a Hulk.
Oh, I thought the Beast had won it off.
You're missing the point. There's no throne. There is no version of this where you come out on top. Maybe your army comes, and maybe it's too much for us, but it's all on you. Because if we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn well sure we'll avenge it.
All right, everybody. It's Jay Stu, and here on location at Tim Hortons, actually. I'm joined once again by, I guess, our resident Marvel Cinematic Movies genius, Daryl.
Hello, hello. Here in Tim Hortons, brought to you by Burger King.
Yes. We had a great time last time you were on, and we enjoyed your theories and thoughts on the movies.
Our one-shot special. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Although it sort of branched out into a lot of basically how it touches on the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. And since that time, we found out that there was no one shot for the Captain America Blu-ray.
I was going to ask you about that.
Bummed about that, yeah. But, you know, it's supposed to be a jam-packed, and we're still waiting on that one because of the delay, because I guess they want to release it in sequence with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, it's coming out soon, too.
It's going to be a two-for-one at Best Buy or whatever. I'm sure if you buy one, you'll be able to get one at a discount.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can watch them all in a row. That's what's great.
Relive it right
from the beginning.
Would you think it would have made a difference if you would have watched the S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes before you saw Cap 2? Because I know lots of people that did that.
Actually, it seems to be the opposite for me. A lot of people are still saving themselves for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
They've seen Cap, because that's the tent pole, I suppose. That's that's the event. That's what you're going to watch. And then they're going to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I guess, see how it builds up and then crosses over the fallout from after that. Most of the people I've spoken to, they're saving themselves probably for the DVD release, just because...
Oh, okay.
I know it was a hard row to hoe for the first half of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
But
the second half was just, you know,
phenomenal
stuff. Fantastic downhill, you know, free for all, basically. Yeah, lots of good stuff.
The Absorbing Man coming on this year.
How about that?
That's awesome.
All the casting news.
Mockingbird.
Mockingbird and Absorbing Man. The dude from, I guess, what's he from? Teen Wolf? I remember from Big Bang Theory from the first season when he was Penny's boyfriend.
That's right.
He beat up Leonard and Pantsdam and Sheldon. That's what I remember him as mostly. And he's a perfect cast. I mean, if anybody looks like Crusher Creel, it's that guy.
Yeah, and I think it was you that mentioned, let's hope we get a Titania.
Exactly. I mentioned on Facebook a couple days. You can't have Absorbing Man without Titania.
True.
It's Bonnie and Clyde, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they definitely need one with the other. Probably Absorbing Man to start with. Hopefully by the end of the season we'll see her break out.
Yeah.
Mockingbird, I don't know too much about the actress playing her. But
she played Wonder Woman in a pilot that kind of got made but not released. Kath and I saw it, and it was actually not bad.
Yeah.
The special effects weren't done, and you could tell, but other than that, it was a decent story.
Well,
she was
all
right.
Show.
Yeah. I think it was going to be on the WB network.
They're going to be introducing her in, Batman vs. Superman. Whenever that comes out, because Cap has now dethroned it.
Yeah. I knew that was going to happen. Let's be honest. As soon as Guardians made all that money, it was like, they're going to move their movie.
I didn't know which one was going to back off, but I knew at least one of them would have to. I mean, it's just... You're asking for too much from the fans.
Yeah.
I definitely want to see both movies.
Oh, yeah,
I'm not a dedicated DC fan, but I'm still going to go plug down my 14 or whatever, 12, 14 bucks, whatever it is nowadays. Who knows what it's going to be by 2016.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm going to plug down my money. I definitely want to see Batman and Superman throw down.
I'm excited about them throwing down. I'm not so excited about all these other cameos they keep mentioning.
Well, let's see. So far we've got Wonder Woman. Zack Snyder is defending Aquaman.
Yeah.
Quite loudly, apparently. I heard something about that.
Yeah, it's rumored the Flash is going to be in it, and Dwayne Johnson might be playing Captain Marvel.
See, now this is the problem that I have with DC, is that the fact that their television universe and their movie universe isn't joined together.
Exactly.
Marvel.
That gives them a Green Arrow and a Flash right there.
You would think that they would just, you know, hey, there you go. You can just step right into the movie role, tie it all in, and just go, just run with it.
But yeah.
I guess maybe because they've gone down. I mean, you're probably more familiar with Green Arrow, even the Flash. I think you saw the pilot.
Yeah.
You saw the trailer at least.
The pilot, well, it kind of made it online, like about 4 months early.
You know what? I'm seeing the TV spots, and even I'm kind of. But I remember the Flash show from the early 90s.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that one?
I taped it every week.
My distinct memory from that, and I don't remember much from it, but I actually remember one of the villains was rocking the Nintendo Power Glove as part of his outfit.
Oh, yeah.
If you ever, they're probably on YouTube, but look it up. I remember one of those villains.
Oh, wow.
Was like, really? This is the best the prop department could come up with? It's just like slap a Power Glove on it and just run with it?
Well, the guy that played the Flash, John Wesley Shipp, on that show, is playing his dad in the new series.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty awesome seeing him there, actually.
You know, DC is actually kind of cute with that, because they did the same thing with Smallville. I can't remember the actress's name, and I feel a bit embarrassed about that, because she was in It. And she was Lana Lang in Superman 3. And then she was recast as
Annette O'Toole.
That's it. Thank you. Yeah. Annette O'Toole, yeah. And then she was recast for Smallville for Martha Kent.
Yeah.
I thought that was a clever bit of casting.
Yeah, definitely. They always brought in people like Dean Cain and Christopher Reeve and stuff like that on Smallville, too.
Did they? No, I only watched the first season. Like I said, I'm not dedicated DC reader or follower, really. But, I mean, even anything comics, I'll give it a shot. It didn't really grab me. It was just a little too. I guess the first season was a bit slow.
It was, yeah.
I wasn't as emotionally invested as something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I had a hard time liking it to start. I really wanted to until it got better, and then because I knew it was going to get better.
Yeah.
And I'd heard great things about Smallville, too, but I just never followed it after the first season. But, yeah, I mean, I liked what I saw up to that point for the most part. It just didn't grab me after that.
Right.
But now, pretty much that's how I equate Gotham. It's Batman Smallville. And it's essentially, that's exactly what it is. It's Gotham, Smallville. I mean, it's going to explore the early origins of a lot of Batman himself, Bruce Wayne, and a lot of the Rogues Gallery.
Yeah.
The Riddler actually looks like kind of an intriguing character for this one.
Oh, okay.
Compared to, like, Jim Carrey's Riddler or something. So really hard to swallow.
You can't see the eye roll I just did. But
it was there.
Oh, goodness.
But getting back on the point with Marvel, though, that's what we're really here to talk about.
Yeah, Marvel. Well, what can you say?
What were your first thoughts? Really? Well, I guess what's the last thing that Guardians of the Galaxy? We were just talking about that before we set up.
I loved it, by the way.
What's not to love?
What's not to love, yeah.
great soundtrack.
Everything about great soundtrack.
Great casting. Great effects.
Yeah.
Great just atmosphere. It was everything Green Lantern wasn't.
Yes, yes. And, like, I went with Kath and Diana and friends who, they didn't really know the characters that well, but they ended up loving the movie.
A lot of people didn't, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, honestly, who did? Except for a couple of lifers like me who have been, like, reading Jim Starlin stuff since I was introduced to his stuff. Well, definitely Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
I was even a little familiar with the death of Captain Marvel before that.
So. Yeah.
But, I mean, Drax and Gamora and Mora, I've been following them for 25 years now, I guess.
Yeah, and I've known Yondu since the 70s when the original Guardians would show up in the Avengers when Perez was working on
Yondu,
the series.
I was definitely familiar with him when Valentino was doing that back in the 90s.
I read that series too.
I've been collecting those in trade paperback the last couple of months. I've been enjoying going back
to
those.
Cool.
That's really nice. And it's nice to see Yondu. And it's an interesting take on the character.
Yeah.
I have to wonder if maybe in a second movie, I wonder if they're going to treat his character like Vance Astro and he'll be propelled to the 30th century. And then he'll be the last of the Alpha Centaurians.
Yeah, maybe.
And he'll be part of Guardians 3000 in a future Guardians movie. Yeah. They like to do this with the setup. You know, like they don't always. You know these characters for years in the comic books.
Yeah.
And then when you see them on screen, you're like, but that's not how they portray them. Yeah. But then when you actually think about it, I mean, there has to be a period of growth for them to get to a certain point. I mean, Iron Man, you know, and Tony Stark started out as Tony Stark, and then it had to be an origin story. So with something like Yondu, yeah, he's like an interstellar mercenary, he's one of the Ravagers, he's the leader of the Ravagers, and interesting twist, him picking up Peter Quill when he was a kid.
Yeah.
So it's a little different from the comic book where his mother died from I think it was originally the Sparthoi themselves, and then it's been retconned now to the Badoon.
Yeah.
Some reptilian race anyway killed his mother. Interesting that they've made it cancer as being the cause of her death now. Makes you wonder if, especially with what's going on in the comics right now in the past few years with the cancer verse, if that's going to tie in. There was definitely a scene at the end there with Gamora when, you know, take my hand, and there was a sense that, I don't know, I got a flash of Mistress Death, actually, and death of Captain Marvel, him dying of cancer. I think the cancer motif might actually be something that actually gets developed as the franchise expands.
Maybe.
The Cancerverse and all that, maybe even a reunion with Meredith Quill in the Realm of Death. There's aspects of the Marvel Universe that are only still now just being touched on, even as we explore the greater cosmos.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange is going to get into that.
Oh, yeah.
And the next Thor movie, too, I'm hoping. Lots of different realms yet to explore, dimensions, things like that.
Yeah, can't wait. So, when did you first start reading these characters, actually? Like, for me, I mentioned the 70s with the George Perez Avengers.
For me, I was introduced to Marvel Cosmic, definitely would have been... I think I could go as far back as Secret Wars.
Okay.
Technically not Marvel Cosmic, but kind of.
Yeah.
That's when Titania was introduced, actually. That's when first became Titania.
Yeah.
Getting back to her, bringing it all back to the strip. Let's see, the cover for me. What started it for me, actually it was one of the very first comics I bought when I was 9 years old, was Secret Wars number 10. The picture of Doctor Doom just completely shredded after facing down the Beyonder.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just one of those covers where I saw that on the spinner rack in Max Milk.
Yeah, I remember that that cover. I was like really starting into collecting comics around that time. So Secret Wars was one of those series I got right into.
Transformers number 3, my first comic. I think I got a Power Man and Iron Fist back then.
Oh yeah.
I remember that was like my second comic was Power Man and Iron Fist. So I'm kind of psyched about Luke Cage and Iron Fist and the stuff for sure. This all goes back to my very first collecting days, definitely. But that Secret Wars cover, that one, and like I was saying, the one after 11, when Doctor Doom is unmasked, those were critical issues for me as a kid.
Yeah.
And I remember in the schoolyard, there was one kid, when number 11 came out, he's like, oh my god, you get to see Doctor Doom's face. And it was a big thing for 9-year old us. Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, for any kid, that was huge. But that was my first introduction to Marvel Cosmic.
Yeah.
After that, Secret Wars 2 was really more, actually, you know what? I mean, it wasn't great.
Had its moments, but
it gave me a greater glimpse into the Marvel Cosmic, because that was my first introduction into the Celestials.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, there was a Transformers character, the Circuit Breaker. She appeared in a couple of issues of Transformers, and then she was actually in Secret Wars, too.
Oh, okay.
So, sort of, plus with Spider-Man and Nick Fury and Dum-Dum Dugan appearing in that Transformers number 3, it was always implied that the Transformers universe was shared with the Marvel universe. Transformers and G.I. Joe did crossovers, so
yep.
I guess by extension G.I. Joe was considered part of the Marvel Universe back in the 80s, back in the thick of it all anyway. And I think there's even an episode, an issue of, I think it was Amazing Spider-Man or Web of Spider-Man, I can't remember which, where Duke from G.I. Joe appears in a Spider-Man issue. And that was a Secret Wars crossover, too, Secret Wars 2.
Oh, okay.
So at the time, I think it was, 84, 85?
Yeah.
Everything that Marvel was doing, they were trying to keep in a shared universe. So, I mean, this, I mean, Marvel and shared universes is something that's nothing new to them, really.
No, they're doing it.
They're trying to accomplish.
They're doing it the right way, that's for sure.
As best that they can, considering X-Men and Spider-Man are different studios.
Yeah.
But that actually leads me to another thought.
Sure.
The Sony Walkman, very prominently displayed, and I think that might actually be something of a statement as to the relationship between Marvel Studios and Sony, and I don't know, almost like a courtship for trying to get Spider-Man back into the fold, I think.
Yeah, it could be.
I'd like to see that. It would be great if the Spider-Man, Peter Parker, could be part of the Marvel Universe. He should be part of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, definitely.
He's always been the flag, the poster boy for Marvel for the longest time. So, I don't know. I thought that was an interesting coincidence. Sony Walkman, but it wasn't a Sony movie. So,
if they get the rights back to Spider-Man and X-Men, maybe we'll see a Secret Wars movie someday.
I don't know. Something like that, that would be really cool. You know, I mean, if we do get into dimension hopping with Doctor Strange, I've actually got a few thoughts. I mean, when you think about it, Coulson was the glue. He actually refers to himself in the Assembling Universe special. I'm the glue.
Yep.
He brought the Avengers together. He's kind of doing it again right now with S.H.I.E.L.D. And I'm sure you've seen the teaser of Cap S.H.I.E.L.D. shattered for Age of Ultron.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's literal or if it's a metaphor, because, I mean, literally, at this point, S.H.I.E.L.D., the organization, is shattered in billions of pieces. And I think that's exactly what he's doing. He's rebuilding it. He's bringing it together. He's the glue.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about that. Like, imagine if Phil Coulson at some point has to, in order to bring back together Cap S.H.I.E.L.D., if it's broken, I mean, it's vibranium. That's been established in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. In order to bring it back, they're going to have to probably, you know, melt it down, temper it, put it back together. And in the comics, if you recall, Cap S.H.I.E.L.D. is actually an alloy of vibranium and adamantium, which, of course, is off-limits because that's part of the X-Men universe.
Yeah,
so imagine if Phil Coulson was able to cross over into the Fox universe, the X-Men universe, in order to get some adamantium. You know, whatever.
That'd be nice.
He gets one of Wolverine's severed claws or something like that. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
And he has to literally use that as glue to put Cap S.H.I.E.L.D. back together. I think on these levels, you know, like you see these themes, and that's what Phil Coulson does. He brings things back together. He puts them together. He brings them together. He's the glue.
That would be fantastic.
So it would be so awesome if in doing that, he brought all the Marvel properties, even if they are from different studios, if they could do some sort of, like, crossover event. That would be cool. Even if they were still in their separate universes, but because there is dimension hopping and universe hopping, if they all got together, those studios, and said, yeah, you know what, for the one time deal, let's do this, a real sort of Secret Wars, bring them all together. It doesn't even have to be everybody. Just, you know, I know that Hugh Jackman said that he wants to be part of the Avengers now as Wolverine. That would be awesome.
That'd be awesome. Dude.
It would be very new Avengers with Spider-Man, Wolverine.
Luke Cage.
The Thing, of course. So it would also be another property that Marvel currently doesn't have.
Yeah.
But an iconic character nonetheless.
Definitely.
It would be cool to see like a super group. And even more super group of Avengers. Even more than it already is.
Yeah, that would be great. But let's take our first break. And we come back. Something I want to ask you about definitely right off the top about a certain cameo at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, I thought we were going to get to that eventually.
All right, so we'll be right back after these words.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Face front, true believers. John Ballmer is an independent artist and illustrator. He has contributed to several indie comics published by Alterna Comics and more, and is able to draw in many styles and genres. John also does commission work in sizes ranging from 3x5 inches to 11x17 inches and even larger. Add some original art to your personal collection or surprise someone with a drawing just for them. Check out his work at drawnbyjohn.com and his Facebook group, Drawn by John, The Art of John J.C. Ballmer.
All right, welcome back. I'm sitting here with our good friend Daryl.
Hello.
We're talking Marvel movies, mainly Guardians of the Galaxy. So I got to ask you, and by the way, the movie's been out over a month, so we're going to spoil right off
we're
the top.
We're spoiler free at this point. Yeah. I haven't heard what's going on in Guardians. So Rocket Ship 11 under, basically.
So the end credits. I stayed away from spoilers, so I didn't know he was coming, but you knew, didn't you? Because you started posting Howard the Duck clips and videos.
Honestly, to be honest, I didn't know.
Okay.
I didn't know that he was going to be the end credit scene. Now, okay. I had sort of gotten, with my being as plugged into what's going on in Marvel, pretty much just scanning the internet.
Yeah.
Anytime there's any sort of news snippet, I'm on. I'm not afraid to spoil myself. I am the first person to spoil myself every time. And I was proud to be spoiled when I found out and actually found the video before the release. That was so cool. But I got a bit of a hint because there was mention of Steve Gerber being thanked in the credits.
Oh,
so it wasn't explicitly mentioned, but there was sort of a buzz that Howard the Duck was going to be in the movie. Now, I didn't know that was going to be the end credits scene. I actually thought it was going to be Adam Warlock. That's what I put all my money on, that he was going to come busting out of that cocoon that we saw at the end of Thor. However, tangential to that, I did notice on my second viewing of Guardians that while everybody is in shock and awe seeing Howard the Duck there drinking his little green martini with Cosmo and the Collector, what an awesome scene.
Oh, yeah.
And I love Cosmo. I really do. I'm so glad that he got into the movie.
Yeah.
I really hope that we get to hear him speak telepathic TK or whatever.
So hoping for that.
It's coming, I think. Again, you got to set it up. I don't think he doesn't have those powers yet.
Yeah.
And in which case, you know, maybe the Infinity Gems imbue him with those powers. But at the end scene, while everybody is agape and stunned at the fact that, oh my god, Marvel actually had the stones to put Howard the Duck back in a movie.
Yeah.
28 years to the day, actually. That was the great part, was that Howard the Duck came out August 1st, 1986.
Yep.
And that was sort of my clue. I sort of picked up on that. I was like, huh. Because if you remember, I posted on Facebook and I said, what an interesting coincidence.
And then you posted the
song.
The song, yeah.
Because I started thinking about it, and I looked at it on YouTube, and I got the song stuck in my head. I actually made a mixtape. I've got Awesome Mix, and then I've got my Awesome Mix.
I saw that. That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That's why it's called the Awesome Mix Volume 2. But, my point was, at the end scene, while everybody is so stunned by the appearance of Howard the Duck, I happen to notice that the chamber that was holding the cocoon is empty now. So after the explosion, that cocoon is gone.
Yeah.
And that's maybe something that a lot of people haven't noticed yet, because all the talk was about Howard the Duck and dancing groups.
Yeah.
And what happened to the cocoon? And so I think it just pretty much got blasted right out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's probably hurtling through space, and I'm really hoping that it shows up in Avengers Age of Ultron. I don't know if you've read Annihilation Conquest. You just got me back the Annihilation books I borrowed to you.
Yeah.
But have you read the follow-up to that?
I haven't, not yet.
That actually, I mean, I won't get into detail with it, but basically what it boils down to is it's an Ultron story.
Okay.
And in the end, he ends up trying to download his consciousness into the perfect organic form of Adam Warlock.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking that there may be a very, very real good opportunity to introduce Adam Warlock in Avengers Age of Ultron.
Right.
Maybe even just another cameo where maybe the cocoon lands on Earth or something like that.
Yeah.
Ties into something else. Either that, or it would be, I'm hoping, in Thor 3. Because I thought it was really cool that it was Sif that walks first in front of the cocoon at the end of Thor 2, in the end credit scene there. Because Sif and Adam Warlock actually have kind of a history going back to, well, the Stan and Jack years, back in the late 60s, I guess, in Thor.
Yeah.
After his first appearance, Adam Warlock's first appearance in Fantastic Four, I think number 66.
Back when he was him?
Him, exactly. And in fact, when he was still him.
Yeah.
Before he was given the name Adam Warlock by the High Evolutionary, he made another appearance in Thor. About three issues, I think. Three or four issues he was in Thor. I've got him in essential form. I wish I had the originals. And he emerges from his cocoon a second time, and he falls in love with Sif.
Okay.
As soon as he sees her, he just instantly falls in love with her. And this is when Thor is first, when he is first suffers from the warrior's madness, which results in his banishment from Asgard.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if maybe that might all tie into maybe the beginning of Thor 3. And I think a lot of people are speculating that it'll probably end up being in Searcher and, basically in the Nether Realms there, I guess.
Yeah.
Which I think we get sort of a tease at the beginning of, at the end of Dark World, when we see the different realms.
Yeah.
The different nine realms, and there's a tease of, I think it's called Muspelheim, which is the Asgardian underworld or netherworld. Their version of hell, basically.
Yeah. Well, I'm calling this right now. Avengers 3 is going to be the Infinity Gauntlet.
It has to be.
Yeah, and you're going to see the Guardians and the Avengers work
hopefully
together.
Hopefully, it'll be the Guardians, Avengers, a much expanded Avengers team, I think, by that time, because this is going to be well after Ant-Man comes out.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Doctor Strange is definitely happening now, even though they still haven't given us a concrete date, I don't think.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at this point, it's pretty much arithmetic. He's been name dropped in Cap 2 by no less a person. Than Jasper Sidwell himself. May he rest in peace.
Yeah.
If he's really dead, no body, no dead. That's what I say. I mean, that's the rule of comics.
That's true.
And I didn't see no body. He went out that window, and who knows what happened after that. Could be an LMD for all we know.
Yeah, true.
Wilson came back. Anything's possible.
Yeah.
Fury came back in the same movie. And the question is, of course, how did Fury come back? He says that, I think he said he was close to death, or I can't remember. I'll have to wait until the Blu-ray comes out to study it again, but
yeah.
He did mention something about somehow coming back, but I don't think it was the same formula as Coulson. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like the Infinity formula, like Nick Fury was always said to have back in the day in the comics.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, what else? So, yeah, Avengers, Age of Ultron, Avengers 3, yeah, that's got to be Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
And getting back to Guardians, hey, our first full shot of Thanos with the Josh Brolin voice and everything.
What'd you think of that, actually?
Badass. And, hey, Ronan taking out the other, just with that force, whatever, it wasn't even the hammer. No, I guess it was the hammer. He used the universal weapon to just spin that head right around, and boom, the other is gone. This guy who was bullying Loki is now gone. This was the big bad. This was the man behind the man in Avengers. You know, this was the guy pulling the strings, threatening Loki, telling him that there is no realm, no barren moon, no crevice where he cannot find you.
Yeah.
No mountain high enough, no river low, valley low enough, no river wide enough.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it was a great cameo, and I can't wait to see more of him.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm hoping that's going to be, I guess Guardians 2, we'll probably see more of him.
Unless he has a cameo in Avengers 2, maybe.
Avengers 2, I could see him at least having some kind of cameo. Maybe not a big role, because obviously this is going to be Ultron's spotlight. This is him, and of course, with the setup with Barrett Strucker.
Yeah.
Which we see at the end of Cap 2, which I'm really excited about. He's got Loki's staff.
Mm-hmm.
We're still wondering if that's an Infinity Gem or not. All signs point to yes.
I think so,
still not giving us a firm answer on that one. I think it's yes. I think I told you about some theories I've had about some of the remaining Infinity Gems.
Yep.
Well, there was my color theory that we talked about, and I still had so many colors in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
I was going crazy. I'm like, okay, there's this yellow goo that Drax almost drowns in. What's that all about? Anytime I see, big primary, secondary colors like that, I start wondering about how does this play out with Infinity Gems and that sort of thing. The orange-blue connection I found interesting. I think I told you about my observations about Iron Man 3 and how at the New Year's Eve party it was all blue and orange. The balloons that Happy was carrying were all blue and orange.
Yeah.
The blue mind gem, which theoretically Loki was holding in the staff. I still contend that Iron Man, whether he knows it or not, is in possession of the orange Infinity Stone, which would be time. I thought it interesting that Star-Lord's ship was, and he actually mentions, it's the blue and the orange one. And I started thinking about that. I'm like, blue and orange, okay, so those are two colors that seem to be mixing quite a bit right now in Marvel Universe. So I think there might have been a little bit of a clue there. There's definitely, I definitely find that there's clues left in the colors, which is appropriate for, you know, I mean, comics.
Yeah.
It's all about the four colors, the primary and the secondary colors. Excuse me. Even the drinks that the Collector and Howard the Duck are drinking at the end, they're very green drinks, and that makes me think, and I was talking about Adam Warlock not being there.
Yeah.
And he was always famous for wearing a green gem on his forehead, so it makes me wonder if there's interest, if there's something, connection there. We're talking about Cosmo.
Yeah.
excuse me. Cosmo is a Russian dog that was presumably shot in space. I guess his origin was never really fully told in the comics. It's still a bit of a mystery. But he speaks Russian. We know that he's from Russia, from Soviet Russia, because he's got the CCCP on his little spacesuit. And, what color do you associate with Soviet Russia?
Red.
Red.
Yeah.
Which is the ether, which we know was in the possession of Collector. Pardon me. I started to wonder, where's he been storing the ether? We know that it can be absorbed into an organic form because it was done with Jane Foster.
Yeah.
So I actually started thinking, what if he's actually keeping the ether inside of a dog?
Oh, maybe.
What if that's how it manifests itself in Cosmo so that he develops these telekinetic powers? And then there's the question that Howard asks him at the end, too. Why do you let him lick you like that? Why does he let him lick him like that?
Yeah.
Maybe it's because Cosmo has now healing properties because he's infused with the ether. And that's
maybe
what's curing the... Because the Collector took quite a shot there when when the orb went up and Karina tried to grab it. I was a little sad to see her go, too, because I thought there was going to be more to do with Karina, his lovely assistant.
Yeah.
Lovely pink-skinned assistant. Because I don't know if you know the Korvac saga.
Oh, I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. Exactly. Karina was Michael Korvac's, she was basically sent by the Collector to seduce, marry, and eventually influence Michael Korvac. Is she dead? Maybe not. Maybe this is something that will be explored down the road. Or maybe it was just a nod to those past stories. It's hard to say. Lots of possibilities, though. But yeah, that was my theory about Cosmo, is that maybe he's got the ether inside of him. Russian space dog that he is, Soviet Russian space dog, red.
Yeah.
Like Hydra. Certain organizations, they seem to have certain colors associated with them. Because Red Skull, of course, was the Red Skull. Obviously, you're always going to associate red with him.
Yeah.
Plus Nazism, too. I guess the red flag. And again, you know, going into communism, lots of red there.
Mm-hmm.
Cosmo seems to make sense to me as the holder of the ether currently.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty clever for the Collector to sort of hide it there. You could say it would be absolutely safe. And Cosmo's still there at the end, so presumably the Collector still has the ether. I mean, if you really want to do a headcount as to where the Infinity Gems are now, we know that the ether is likely still in Collector's possession.
Mm-hmm.
Nova Corps has the orb, or the stone from within the orb.
Yeah.
Poor Yondu, stuck with that troll.
Oh, jeez.
But he didn't seem too broken up about it.
No.
We know the Tesseract is on Asgard, and that leaves, Loki's Death Scepter, if it is an Infinity Gauntlet, if it is an Infinity Gem, then we know that it's in the possession of Hydra. And it looks like it's being used to create super people like Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Yeah.
That seems to be how they get their powers anyway. And that's why I'm wondering about whether Iron Man has at least part of the time. I think what happens is it's the Ten Rings. That's what the Time Gem is.
Yeah.
I think that's where the Mandarin is going to come into all of it. I still watch All Hail the King, and I still don't quite get it all.
I know.
I still don't get it, you know? I just, every time I watch it, I almost get it. I almost feel like I've got a handle on what they're trying to tell me, but we just don't have enough pieces of the puzzle yet.
Yeah.
We don't have enough rings.
Yeah, well, let's take another break at this point. We'll be right back with some more Guardians talk and other Marvel movies talk. So stay tuned.
Get back to TV, too, yeah.
Stay tuned, loyal listeners. There's more We Got the Geek still to come. Sketchbook Comics and Games is a store that has something awesome for everyone. In addition to selling comics, board games, and action figures, there are tables for open gaming. Wednesday nights, Sketchbook features game night starting at 6 p.m. Friday through Sunday, Sketchbook is the place to be for Magic the Gathering. The store is located at 224 Glenridge Avenue, Unit 9 in St. Catharines. Come on down for all your geek comic book needs.
All right, we're back. It's Jay, Stu, and Daryl talking Guardians and Marvel theories and whatnot.
Hey.
And getting back to Guardians, who was your favorite character in the movie?
So many. So many to choose from.
Well, Groot stole the movie for me, I thought.
Groot was good.
Yeah.
I definitely like Groot. I mean, for a guy who's got, five moves, capable of saying five words, the we are at the end there. Such range and expression. And definitely the best role for Vin Diesel by far. I've never been a fan of Vin Diesel.
Same here.
I'm not a Fast and Furious fan. I'm not a Riddick fan.
Same here.
I can't stand it.
See, going into the movie, I had my reservations about Vin Diesel and Bradley Cooper, actually.
Well, because I knew he was only going to have one line throughout the entire movie, I wasn't too worried about Vin Diesel. I mean, basically, they wanted to get the essence of his voice. The fact that he was able to pull off the range, that's just a plus.
Yeah.
So I wasn't too worried about that. And you know what? Since the movie came out, he's basically the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge everybody's doing, but he's also doing like the plant a tree thing. You know, he's encouraging people to plant trees, and he's using Groot's newfound celebrity to do that. I think that's great. You know?
Yeah, that is good.
It's certainly nothing but good for the environment. And it's good for him, you know. Like, here he is. He's making a tree of all things a likable hero that people can actually, you know, go out there and, you know, you wanted your own group? Go plant a tree. There you go. You've got a group. You know?
Yeah.
Take joy in that. Just the fact that, you know, trees are people too.
And here's the thing about Groot in the movie. I've read comics where he's regenerated from little branches like that.
About 5-6 years ago, that's been pretty standard for his.
Didn't see that coming in the movie, though, for some reason. I was all teary-eyed when it happened. And
yeah, I mean, I got to admit that I did see that it was going to be coming. I knew that Groot's sacrifice was a sacrifice, very much like the one that was in Annihilation Conquest. He did a very similar thing where he basically burst into flames.
Oh, okay.
Rocket grabs one of his little cuttings there, and he grows him back. And I think it happens about once or twice, actually, within the Annihilation Conquest storyline.
Oh, it's happened during the Bendis series, even. And I just, for some reason, didn't see it coming. So.
What was more interesting in the Bendis thing is that he can actually grow at will quite rapidly from a little seedling in a pot to a full-size Groot. At the end of the Avengers Assemble, he attacks Thanos. So there was that. And the funny thing is that it was established in the movie, too, that he could regenerate quite easily because Gamora takes his arms right off almost right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And Rocket just turns to him and says, well, what are you moping about? You know, they're going to grow right back.
Yeah.
And they did. They were still growing in the mugshot scene. Interesting that the scenes in the movie don't match the trailers. Drax isn't in the mugshot because they meet him in the kiln at the prison. And Groot is, of course, heavily modified there with no arms, slowly growing back as he's peering down. So they did a little bit of fudging at the
They don't actually block out
if they show
Quill showing the finger.
Yeah, that was nice too. Yeah, the uncensored the machine. Yeah, but I guess it wouldn't have made sense to have an armless Groot in the trailer from a year ago, because people were even 6 months ago. Because people were like, how come he got no arms?
Yeah,
but I can understand why they changed the animation a little bit for that. It does flow a lot better through the movie. The missing Drax, well, obviously it was just tacked on there because it was an introduction.
Yeah.
Who the hell knew the Guardians 6 months ago? Nobody. Or 95% of the movie-going public certainly didn't. Everybody knows Groot now, though.
That says something for Marvel, though, that they can put out a movie of basically characters not a lot of people know about, and then people love it.
It's kind of amazing.
We'll see how Ant-Man holds up, too.
Especially considering some of the production difficulties. I mean, Edgar Wright, the biggest, strongest, you know, supporter for Ant-Man since 2006, before Iron Man even came out. I mean, Ant-Man's been in production hell since the birth of Marvel Studios, basically. Mm-hmm. He's been the one who was attached to the project in the beginning, and then suddenly he just up and quits a couple months ago, just before
filming starts.
They were still rewriting it 3 days before they started filming it.
Which apparently was what prompted him to leave. So obviously something came into conflict there. It didn't match his vision.
Yeah. I mean, I feel a little bit better about it after seeing the panel they did at San Diego.
I have a feeling that it's still in good hands.
Yeah.
It might not be exactly what they'd hoped for. Hopefully it's not going to be sort of a dud like Incredible Hulk was, which was still an improvement over Ang Lee's Hulk, but still.
I guess we're going to see a glimpse into the past with Henry Pym and S.H.I.E.L.D. agents.
Yeah.
Apparently John Slater, he's coming back as Howard Stark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it pronounced Slattery or Slattery?
Slattery sounds better.
It does, because, you know, Trevor. He's an actor love.
Yes.
And that's another coincidence, because he's an actor. And it may be that, when he says that, is a clue not to characters in continuity, but maybe that's suggesting something outside. And the whole Slattery connection. I also like the fact that Trevor Slattery's initials match Tony Stark's. Makes you wonder what the connection is there, because I think there's definitely a Mandarin connection with Tony Stark.
Yeah.
They're one and the same, or they're closely related, one or the other. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
At least we'll find out at some point. Again, these are theories.
Yeah.
But yeah, John Slattery, he's coming back. We've only seen him in what? In the home movies that
Iron Man 2.
Yeah. The shield box that brought. But the question is, we've got Dominic Cooper playing Howard Stark, younger Howard Stark, in now coming up in Agent Carter. He's going to be reprising his role. So that begs the question now, are these two different Howard Starks? Is Howard Stark on the home movies actually Howard Stark?
Hmm.
Or what if it's, what if he's an imposter?
Yeah, maybe.
What if whatever he was trying to tell Tony in those home videos was a red herring, a misdirection completely?
Yeah.
Trevor Slattery says at the end, or close to the end of Iron Man 3, you know, they gave me plastic surgery, they gave me drugs, I want to love the speedboat. And it makes you wonder, what if the Howard Stark that we see in those home movies isn't actually Howard Stark? What if it's just somebody, a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent possibly, made up to look like Howard Stark, lead Tony in a direction that he wouldn't otherwise have gone in?
Oh, maybe.
Dominic Cooper is the real Howard Stark. We know that from Captain America and onwards.
Yeah.
What if John Slattery is a phony Howard Stark, a ringer?
Yeah.
Tony was never very close with his dad, didn't see a lot of him, of course died when he was still very young.
Yeah.
He was quite old when he was born, even really, but if he was running around being a ladies' man back in the 40s, then Tony was 17 in the 90s, I think they established in Iron Man 1, so, I mean, that's a lot of time. He really, you know, it must have been like a May-December romance between Maria and Howard Stark, I think. So it begs the question, what exactly is John Slattery coming back for? Why wouldn't they have stuck with the Howard Stark that they have that they're keeping for Agent Cooper or for Agent Carter? Kyle McLaughlin, he's on my mind here for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But why wouldn't they just make him up to look older? Why have somebody else entirely recast for
that? Right.
What if they are actually two different Howard Starks? How many Howard Starks are there? There was also a different one cast for the, I think, the newspaper scene.
Oh, for the first
one,
yeah.
We'll call that one a recast because, you know, there was a lot of recasts since Iron Man 1.
Yeah.
Paris Howard.
Yeah.
Edward Norton. Yeah, so there was a bit of a couple of mulligans with the casting there from the very first Phase 1. Almost Phase 0, I call it, really. The first two movies.
Yeah.
Iron Man and Incredible Hulk. Phase 1 is really Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, Avengers. I really think of Iron Man 1 and Incredible Hulk is almost like a pre-phase one. Phase zero. Phase point one, I suppose you'd call it.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it did, so there was a little bit out of sync, because there was that one year where there was no Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
2009.
Yeah.
A dark year, no Marvel movie. That's so sad. And I think that might have to do with Incredible Hulk being kind of a so-so movie. Iron Man was great. Incredible Hulk was not as much. Yes, they were connected because Tony Stark showed up at the end.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I kind of felt like they may have sort of lost a step with the less than stellar success of Incredible Hulk, and then sort of, because it really felt like they were definitely setting up Captain America in Incredible Hulk, because there was a lot of talk of the super soldier serums. There's the deleted scene where he's at the North Pole, or up north anyway, and you actually see a little bit of Cap there when he hulks out and busts the ice. So it seemed like they were playing up the Captain America angle. We're going to go right into it. And then I guess, you know, for whatever reason, the movie didn't do so good. They downplay it now.
Yeah.
They didn't even mention, really, the lack of success for Incredible Hulk during the Assembling the Universe special. Yeah. They said, oh, yeah, we're doing this.
I think I saw it 3 years after it was in the theater.
It took me a while to see it, too. I didn't even bother to see it in the theater. I was excited because Tony Stark was in it. You know, Iron Man was a great movie. I'm like, cool, this is it. This is the shared universe. I mean, they were finally showing us, even just, what, 2 months after Iron Man came out. Here we go. Here's the proof.
Yeah.
We've got Nick Fury in Iron Man, and then we've got Tony Stark in Incredible Hulk. And it was nice.
Yeah.
But then there was nothing for like 2 years until Iron Man 2 came out. So it almost felt like they had to go back to the drawing board and restart with Phase 1 from going from there.
Yeah.
And then they hit their stride. And then even Iron Man 2 wasn't that well received, I think. And it was a bit of a dip from the first movie.
Yeah.
It's the weakest of the three, I think.
Still like it a lot, though.
Still love it.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think Iron Man 3 is my favorite. I didn't care for it at first, but it's the constant reviewings that I watched it, and it's just there's so much going on, and it still hasn't been revealed or resolved. There's still so much that has to be exposed. And I think that's what Avengers: Age of Ultron is going to do, especially at that and Thor: Dark World too. I think both of them. And I think a big reason why there were one shots on those Blu-rays is because, from a storytelling standpoint, they're kind of incomplete movies. They're complete movies in the 2 hour, 2.5 hours long. There's Hugh Jackson sequences, lots of story, lots of romance in both, but you don't really feel at the end of the movie like you've gotten enough information. Like, but I want more.
Oh, that whole last scene of Odin switching into Loki is like a WTF moment. Like, wait, that's the end of the movie? Come on.
What? Exactly, yeah. And then, of course, just check out the wood seal over there.
Oh, nice.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
The superhero car. That seems appropriate.
It does.
But we got a car up front that is just completely decked in superhero stuff. Nick Fury, Batman, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I want that to be my car.
Iron Man in there.
Sorry for the distraction.
No, that's awesome.
But it's one of those times when we wish you had video.
Yeah.
sorry, what was I saying?
The end of Thor: The Dark World.
Thor: Dark World, yeah. Completely lost my train of thought. That incredibly cool car out there. Yeah. It's just completely derailed.
Just that we wanted more, and it kind of abruptly ended.
From a storytelling standpoint, it just didn't feel like the whole story was being told.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of the purpose of putting one-shots on the Blu-rays, so that there was still that desire. I mean, aside from the fact that it was also to get you to buy the Blu-ray instead of the DVD. Now Blu-ray is pretty standard, so it's not like they need to entice you to upgrade to Blu-ray. They're trying to upgrade you to the 3D Blu-ray now.
Oh, jeez.
Which I did do for Thor because it had the nicer, it had the sleeve, and I was like, yeah, you know what? It's just a piece of cardboard, but I'm a sucker for it. I'm a sucker for good artwork, so I'll take it.
I got to tell you, I was a little disappointed with San Diego because I thought they were going to announce an Iron Man 4 the way he was talking like in the weeks leading up to that.
I thought they were going to at least announce the full Phase 3 line, which they didn't do.
And
they're still basically working on speculation.
Well, they announced the Guardians 2, which was pretty decent.
I think the focus was on Guardians, mostly because they wanted to make sure that the focus was on Guardians. Mm-hmm. It was coming out a week later. Everybody still had their fingers crossed. Yeah, I mean, all the early reviews, everything, all the buzz, everything. I mean, I knew it was going to be a done deal. I knew it was going to be a smash hit as soon as they announced it. Because I had read the original comics, just the 2008 comic book to 2010. The 2 year, the 25 issue there that Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning did.
Yeah.
A fantastic story.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read it, it reads like the best Star Wars movie ever, you know? I mean, with characters that you've never met before, you know, well, unless you're really familiar with Marvel. I mean, that was the great thing, is that these are obscure characters from all over the Marvel Universe. It's interesting that most of the characters featured in the core Guardians of the Galaxy were almost all introduced in the 70s. Rocket Raccoon in Marvel Premiere and the Incredible Hulk. Star-Lord in Marvel Premiere. Drax and Gamora were both Jim Starlin creations from the 70s.
Yeah.
He's the only one who predates everything, including the Marvel Universe,
yeah,
being his first appearance in 1960.
When I was a kid, I remember seeing that Marvel Premiere with Star-Lord in the store, too. Could kick myself.
Don't
for...
you wish? Yeah.
Yeah.
No kidding. No kidding. I mean, I had an Amazing Spider-Man 300, first
okay.
appearance of Venom.
I still have that one.
I got it for $3.
Nice.
Sold it for $10.
Well, you made a profit.
I made $7. You know what I could make nowadays with that comic?
A lot more than that.
A lot more, yeah, exactly. Probably.
Dude, I had the first appearance of the Punisher in...
Spider-Man.
I used to. I was a little kid and reread that book so much that the cover fell off it.
Now, I have one of his early appearances, the Frank Miller-drawn cover from Captain America. I think it was Cap 241 or something. Nice picture of the Punisher standing on Cap's shield,
yeah,
leveling his gun at a shieldless Cap. And I picked that one up for about $10 back in, I think, 91.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, there was a great deal for that one. I was like, I remember asking, what's the catch? He's like, no catch, $10.
Oh, wow.
And I think it was like one of the very first appearances of the Punisher, not the first. Which, yeah, that Spider-Man issue.
I wish I'd go back in time and kick young Jay Stu's ass for ripping that cover off.
There's a couple of comics. I mean, I wouldn't say that there was a lot that I really had that was truly valuable back in the day. Unfortunately, when I actually started getting serious into collecting and taking care of my books, I've held on to most of those books since. So I've got a first Deadpool in absolute mint condition.
Oh, that's good.
It is just absolutely pristine. If I got that thing CGC'd, I could get like a couple bucks for it, for sure.
Let's go off topic a little bit here then. Did you see the Deadpool footage they
yes.
put out?
Oh, doesn't that make you just want a Ryan Reynolds Deadpool?
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Ryan Reynolds as Wade Wilson. I thought the early scenes in
yes.
X-Men Origins Wolverine, as much of an atrocious abomination, abortion of a Marvel movie as that is, just awful. I don't know, I just didn't like Liev Schreiber as...
But Ryan Reynolds was great at the beginning of the movie.
Towards the end, I don't know what they were thinking with
right.
his look and everything, but obviously, we'll just call that sort of development of the character that unfortunately didn't go anywhere up to this point.
Yeah.
Now the franchise has been rebooted with Days of Future Past, which I still haven't seen.
Oh, dude.
I know. I'm really depriving myself here. I do want to see it. I'm not heavy into the X-Men cinematic universe, but I do watch them. I actually picked up the 6-disc Blu-ray, all of the movies.
Oh, okay.
One all the way up to the Wolverine, which I did like, actually.
Yeah, me too.
I don't really care for the Viper as a mutant. She wasn't in the comic book. She isn't in the comic books.
Yeah.
She was always a Captain America villain, really, which
yeah.
is what I really dug about her. And I got all of her appearances, including the Japanese Wolverine issues from the early 80s from the X-Men.
Yeah.
I've even got some of the original Jim Steranko drawn and written Captain America issues, which introduced her as Madam Hydra.
Oh, okay.
Which would be really cool if they sort of did a Quicksilver and, you know, they let X-Men have their mutant Viper and then they introduce Madam Hydra in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That way they can have a Viper, quote-unquote, without it actually being Wolverine's Viper. And I think they can do it so much better, too.
Yeah.
Oh, she's not blonde. She's supposed to have green hair. She's not a mutant. She's not supposed to have snake tongues.
Yeah.
She's a crazy chick with a bad scar on her face, and she's a nihilist. Something that really, you know, with Thanos is the same way. They both basically espouse the same ideologies. Mm-hmm. Nihilism, the love of nothing, the love of chaos and disorder and destruction. So I think that is for the potential for a Hydra villain, and wouldn't that be great if she was introduced in something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, just why not? I mean, yeah, okay, you're going to have Hydra with Baron Strucker and in the early, at least the first half of Age of Ultron, but, I mean, obviously, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2 is going to build up to Age of Ultron just like it built up to Captain America.
Oh, yeah.
I'm hoping that it actually builds up to Agent Carter. And then through whatever reason, the story requires a flashback to 1946, and then we see the Agent Carter story. Hopefully it all ties together, basically. It all dovetails so that the first half of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. leads right into Agent Carter, and then at the resolution of Agents of Carter, and I think the eight episodes that it's going to be,
mm-hmm.
then it goes back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then hopefully it goes straight into
Oh, that'd be
Age
awesome.
Of Ultron, so that it all is just all built. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, let's hold that thought, dude. We're going to come back for another segment right after this.
Hold on, true believers. There's more We Got the Geek after these words.
Mostly Comics has been serving the Niagara region for over 30 years. The store sells a variety of comics and entertainment-related products, including graphic novels, toys, and collectibles. Mostly also purchases rare comics upon appraisal. Visit Kim and the Gang at 413 St. Paul Street in St. Catharines, or check out their website at www.mostlycomics.com.
All right, we're back. It's Jay, Stu, and Daryl here at Tim Hortons. And now that we've established that Marvel can do no wrong and they had great success with Guardians, characters you really haven't heard too much about, what obscure characters would you like to see them take a crack at next?
Obscure characters?
Yeah.
Well, that's an even more intriguing question, actually. It throws off where I was going with the thought there. Because I think we know that a lot of buzz about Black Panther and Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Ms. Marvel, whichever you want to call her. Carol Danvers looks like she's going to be the Captain Marvel in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I want to see both those movies when they come out, definitely.
Yeah,
I've never been a huge Black Panther fan, but I think it's definitely going to happen. I think it has to happen because if Vibranium comes from Wakanda, then eventually they're going to visit there. I think that's actually touched on in Age of Ultron. As for obscure characters, wow.
Well, let's... Like, there's a lot of Avengers you can choose, even.
There are, yeah. And, you know, they could pop up anywhere, really. That's the beauty of something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where they can just sort of use those third-stringer characters.
Like, we got the Falcon this year.
The Falcon? Well,
yeah.
But you kind of knew that was going to happen in the modern Cap movie. He's the modern Cap partner. But that's actually a good lead-in to me, because if I had to pick an obscure character, it would have to be my favorite. The one that I've committed myself for years to dedicate my website
to. See if I remember this. Nomad?
That's the one. I don't see him showing up in a movie, not even a Cap movie.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I would like to see Agent Carter jump decades from the 40s to the 50s to the 60s, that where you can actually explore something like 50s Cap and Bucky with Jack Monroe and the false Steve Rogers. Brubaker gave him a name, but I can't remember what it is right now. He's always just been the grand director, the false Steve to me.
Yeah.
So that's what he'll always be. But yeah, I'd love to see Agent Carter decade jump to the 50s or the 60s and show the Marvel Universe basically in its formative years as it built up to Iron Man 1. We'll probably see a little bit of that in Ant-Man too, since they're going to be doing the flashbacks with a young Hank Pym. Nomad would definitely be the top of my list. Being just a third stringer Captain America sort of backup character, and really just a stand-in for Bucky when the rule was you couldn't bring Bucky back until the rule was shattered. No, man. Considering the fact that they brought Gwen Stacy back at least in the movies anyway. Hey, they could do anything now except maybe Uncle Ben. But I'd like to see Nomad. Now he's not really much of a character, maybe just sort of, he is the poor man's Bucky. Literally, he is just a replacement for Bucky. But I'd like to see that definitely. Or any of the invaders, really, from the 40s. That's what I'd like to see in Agent Carter, is an exploration of the other possible invaders, or at least the Howling Commandos, and maybe the occasional character. If we saw Phineas Horton's synthetic man in action, even not flaming, because that would be a little too close to Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about that movie, too, by the way, especially the fact that it shares the universe with X-Men, so it's not my Human Torch, but I'll take it. And hey, you know, anything's possible, right? Chris Evans was the Human Torch, now he's Captain America. Just like when he was at the recruitment center, he went from 4F to 1A. Fantastic Four to First Avenger.
Anything is possible. I mean, did you ever think in a million years you'd see Howard the Duck in a movie again?
Again? No.
Yeah.
It seemed like that. But that's one of the most renowned, that goes down in history as one of the most widespread, critically and commercially panned movies. I mean, basically, in the dictionary next to bad movie was a picture of Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
It was the definition of a bad movie for the longest time. And you know what? Honestly, it's not that bad. It kind of it holds up better than a lot of stuff in the 80s.
I've seen it in recent years. I didn't hate it.
I picked up the DVD a week before Guardians came out because I had a hunch. And they happened to have it at That's Entertainment there on Lake Street. So I picked up a copy. And I was going to rent it, and then I actually had it to buy it. And I was like, you know what? What the hell? I'll buy it. Probably only going to watch it once, and then sure enough, he ends up in Guardians, and I think I've watched it like 3 times now.
Yeah.
So it was a good investment. And I have a feeling a lot of people are going to be buying it because everybody wants to know, who the hell is this duck at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
For the people who don't know, a lot of the kids maybe that don't remember the bad movie from the 80s or Steve Gerber's amazing satirical run in the comics, which is being re-released in an omnibus form, and I'm looking forward to that. I've only got a couple of issues of Howard the Duck from back in the day, so I'd like to get a complete story.
Do you see Marvel doing another Howard movie, or maybe he just shows up in Guardians 2?
I think it was kind of just like a wag. It was definitely an homage. I mean, Guardians came out on August 1st.
Yeah.
First Marvel movie to come out. I think it's the biggest movie ever to come out in August.
Yeah.
It shattered August box office records. But it came out on the exact same day Howard did 28 years before, August 1st, 1986. When I was doing my light Howard research, I saw the poster, and I was like, that's what first sort of tipped me off.
Yeah.
I'm like, what a coincidence. Howard came out on August 1st. Guardians is coming out on August 1st.
Yeah.
And at first, my first thought was just a lot of people were saying that Guardians was a risk. It was a risky play by Marvel because these are characters that nobody heard of. But whatever, they said the same thing when Iron Man came out.
True.
Nobody had heard of Iron Man.
True.
Not really true. I mean, people had heard of Iron Man, but he wasn't Spider-Man, he wasn't the Hulk, he wasn't even Captain America. He was Iron Man. Since then, of course, now he's Tony Stark. He is Iron Man.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. basically made the character his. I think Chris Pratt is doing the same thing with Star-Lord. Look at Star-Lord. He's kind of a breakout character from, I think they're all kind of breakout hits from that, but Star-Lord especially, because he really is a character that I did not know that much about, and he really was obscure in the Marvel Universe until they brought him back, I'm going to say about 10 years ago, and put him in, I think that Thanos had a regular series there for a while, and I think he was in a couple of the last issues, and then it went right into the Annihilation, and that's where the character really, along with Richard Rider, Nova, and Drax, they really got reimagined and just became these kick-ass cosmic characters that you really wanted to know more about. And Star-Lord, especially since the movie now, I mean, now he's got his own series.
Yeah.
They're just going like gangbusters.
I'll tell you this. I am never going to question Marvel's casting choices ever again.
You never know.
They
right?
can do no wrong you as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I'm not a big Tommy Lee Jones fan. The worst Two-Face ever.
Yeah. Oh,
but hey, wasn't he great as General Phillips?
He's fantastic
it's
in that
It's all
movie.
About getting the right actor for the right role. And it doesn't seem, maybe it doesn't seem like the right role when you see it just on like... on the Facebook or on the news feeds or whatever, but seeing is believing.
I'm no Michael Douglas fan, but I can't wait to see what he's going to pull off with Hank Pym.
An elderly Hank Pym, anything's possible.
Yeah.
I'm assuming somebody else is going to be a younger Hank Pym. Flashback scenes.
Yeah.
Evangeline Lilly as she's playing a Van Dyne and is going to be Hank Pym's daughter.
Has the looks haircut.
Like looks like she's going to be Wasp.
Yeah.
Seems like a done deal. But sort of a reimagined Wasp with a slightly different name. Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean,
whatever.
How long ago did Pepper Potts die in the comic books? Long time.
Yeah.
Happy Hogan, too, actually. So it's kind of interesting that they've introduced them in the movies and they've actually lasted this long.
Yeah.
They've probably retconned and brought him back to life in the comics just because, people watching the movies then read the comics and, hey, where's my favorite character? Where's Gwyneth Paltrow?
Yeah.
Where's Jon Favreau? Where are their characters? So I'm sure they brought him back for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I was crushed, and now, spoiler alert, if you've been reading, or if you haven't been reading Original Sin, which I haven't been, but I just got the news the other day that Dum-Dum Dugan brought up.
Yeah.
You mean you tell me he's been dead since 1966? One of my favorite stories. He had a heart attack back in 1983. That was actually the first time Jack Monroe put on the Nomad outfit. And alongside S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Gail Runster. And that's an agent that I want to see show up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And, what's his name, Clay Quartermain.
Oh, yeah.
He was a famous... Nick Fury's number two man, I think, for a long time. They brought Alexander Pearce in, and what was interesting was that he was actually Nick Fury, SLJ Nick Fury's mentor, whereas in the comics back in the 90s, if you remember, Alexander Pearce was his protege. He was basically, his hand-picked, hand-selected, basically, it was Nick Fury's number two.
Yeah.
After Dum-Dum Dugan, of course. But yeah, Dugan. They killed him off in the comics, and here I am hoping and praying that they're going to bring him back in Agent Carter.
Yeah.
So, who knows? And with establishing him as having died in 1966 and just having LMDs ever since then, maybe that means we'll get a Dum Dum Dugan and Agent Carter, at least up to about the 60s, and then that's what the, then they'll, that's how they'll explain his absence.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, without an infinity formula or being frozen on ice,
yeah,
or a time gem of some sort, characters from the 40s aren't going to make it up to this time. I mean, we were lucky to catch even a glimpse of Peggy Carter.
Yeah.
As in and out of it as she was there with her civility in Cap 2. But, you never know what the right cast is going to be until you actually see it. And sometimes even the recasts. I mean, honestly, I can't think of anybody other than Don Cheadle as a Rhodey now. In fact, it's kind of weird when I go back and watch Iron Man 2. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like Terrence Howard.
Yeah.
But he's just not Rhodey anymore. I think it's funny, there's that one scene in Iron Man 3 when Tony says to Rhodey on the phone, he's like, oh, last time I went missing, he came looking for me. Yeah, that was a different Rhodey.
I feel the same way about Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk now, too.
I don't think they could do anybody else. What I kind of like about that, actually, what I liked about the Hulk and Bruce Banner and even Edward Norton was, did you notice that Skinny Steve at the beginning of Captain America First Avenger looked a lot like Edward Norton?
A little bit, yeah.
Even when they were doing the Super Soldier and, like, his eyes bugged out, I was like, oh, my God, he's going to Hulk out. But he didn't, because he turned into Cap instead, sort of semi-Hulk and a permanent Hulk.
Yeah.
But it was actually kind of amazing that he actually looked a little bit like Edward Norton. And, of course, they had laid up the whole Captain America angle and the Super Soldier Serum, and that was the pursuit that Bruce Banner was after. And that was the whole point of his using the gamma radiation and all that stuff and how he became the Hulk. And, of course, the gamma emissions from the Infinity Gems and the Tesseract, of course, that's a nice way of tying that in, too. So who knows? Maybe we'll get an explanation as to why he's green. And I would still love to see a Red Hulk, too.
Oh, yes.
I don't know. I mean, we've got who? Glenn Talbot showing up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That was very cool.
Oh, yes.
Hadn't seen him in the movies since Ang Lee's Hulk. There was Glenn Talbot in that, but that was a completely different type of character. I like him a lot better in Agents.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to see Thunderbolt Ross come back, General Ross. I don't know if... I don't know. I don't know if Betty Ross is going to be in Avengers Age of Ultron. I thought I had heard something about Liv Tyler actually reprising the role and maybe even a scene with... Doc Samson. Samson, who was, I can't remember the actor's name, but he's on Modern Family.
Ty Burrell.
That's it, Ty Burrell. Yeah, thank you. So, I mean, I'd love to see him reprise his role as Doc Samson. I think he's actually interested in doing it, too. But whether or not they actually show up in Avengers, it's anybody's guess at this point.
Yeah.
But it would be nice, because then it would actually sort of really, really fasten Incredible Hulk with the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It almost feels like a bit of the redheaded stepchild of the movie.
Yes.
Because of the recasting, because there's very little that happened in that movie that has really impacted anything else, except for some, you know, being on the screen at the end of Iron Man 2. That was really it.
Yeah.
The timeline got very confused with that.
Well, Coulson talked about it a bit in The Consultant, too.
Yes. That's pretty much how they had to tie it all up.
Yeah.
The Consultant, yeah. Which was nice, because at least that... Because you didn't really understand what Tony Stark was doing going approaching Thunderbolt Ross about it.
Yeah.
Like, why is he going up to the general and saying he's going to be starting a team? And this was way before Avengers. So, of course, the whole Avengers initiative got scrapped because it was an idea that was in play at one point and then was rejected. And then, of course, necessity brought it about anyway with Loki and the Tesseract. So... I mean, really, all that scene at the end of The Incredible Hulk was a tease for us, the fans. It didn't really make a lot of sense as far as the story went.
Yeah.
And so they just kind of shoehorned it in there. Of course, then they had to sort of finesse it with them. And I think that was really the birth of the one-shots, was the, okay, we've got these sort of disparate, sort of loose ends, hanging threads that don't really make a lot of sense. Let's tie them up. Let's make it all come together and make it look kind of good. And they do it in a sort of clever, quick little way. Didn't cost them anything.
Yeah.
Especially for that one, because they put the whole budget into that. As we learned from the Assembling Universe special, they put all the budget into the funny thing happens on the way to Thor's hammer. And I really want to see Coulson really just bust out like that again, you know. He hasn't really had the opportunity to do that in the actual show, so I hope we get to see some kung fu fighting from Coulson. Especially now that he's got alien blood raging through him.
Yeah.
He should be kicking ass all over the place. And Sky, too. I'm hoping to see more of her. I really want to see this develop, this mystery blue goo that they've gotten them. I mean,
yeah,
they're going to tease us probably for seasons and seasons and seasons with this. We'll never really know.
Oh, man.
That's Marvel's way, but we all want answers next week, right?
Oh, yeah. I keep saying, why can't it be next May already so we can see Avengers Age of Ultron?
Well, at least we've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. and Agent Carter and then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. again to build up. I mean, it keeps you warm throughout the entire year, basically. It's not the full, like I said, tentpole experience, the gigantic event that a movie is, but it keeps you in the universe. Like I said, I've got one foot in the universe at almost all times.
They're talking about maybe doing 3 movies a year now.
I think they can pull it off. I mean, think about it. We've had 4 Marvel movies this year. When you consider Spider-Man and X-Men,
yeah,
they all did well. Maybe not Spider-Man 2 as much,
right.
But X-Men certainly, you know, has rejuvenated the franchise. Well, I mean, First Class had already done that, but from what I understand, anyway, Days of Future Past is a fantastic movie.
Oh, it is, and they've established they can release a movie in April when no one goes to see the movies and have
it
be a big hit.
Slam out of the park blockbuster in August. Apparently, there was never really been a blockbuster that late in the summer.
Yeah. They're usually done by that time.
That's exactly, yeah. That's when it's winding down. But it was kind of an early season with Cap, Spidey, and X-Men. Actually, they were all pre-summer vacay.
Yeah.
They were all spring movies, really. To be fair, Cap was definitely a spring movie. Spidey and X-Men were both May movies, so, you know, that's a pre-comic book day, basically.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you this. Normally this would be the end of the show, but would you come back for one more segment?
I would.
All right.
I could go on. I could keep going.
We're going to do one more segment, and we'll be right back after this.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
A new spin on the traditional comic book store. Hulk Comics is the place to buy all your new comics, graphic novels, toys, and collectibles. Located at 4559 Queen Street in Niagara Falls, we have over 20,000 back issues, Wi-Fi, arcade, posters, DVDs, MTG, RPG games, board games, complete with 1,400 square feet of gaming tables and vintage arcade downstairs. Hulk Comics cares about you and your comic buying experience. That's why all of our comics are bagged and boarded, whether you're a pull-list subscriber or just shop off the rack. Table rentals are now $5 for a full session of tabletop goodness. Bring your own game or play any of the available house games. Cards, dice, pawns, and pencils, everything you need for an evening of competitive social interaction, schemes and intrigue, luck, both good and bad included, and an awful lot of fun. At Pulp Comics, we have the fiction for your affliction.
All right, we're back here at Tim Hortons with Daryl talking Marvel movies. And we're going to go over that, but that's no big deal.
We just got stuff.
Now, we haven't really seen you since we did the last show.
The one show that's back in, right after Cat came out.
Yeah. You got to meet someone who was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at the Niagara Falls Comic Con.
Yeah,
I haven't had a chance to talk to you about that.
There was actually an interesting little aspect of that I wanted to talk about, too. I got to meet Deoade, Agent Barber. From the episode, I think it was Turn. A great episode. It was the first one after Cap.
Yep.
He had just a small role in it. Show Me Your Hands was this big line there when he was talking to Agent Triplett, and it really resonated with me because you don't know if he's saying show me your hands, as in show me your 5 fingers, or show me that you are Victoria Hands. There was a lot of mystery as to what exactly he was saying, and I've thought a lot about that since. I didn't, actually, at the time, when I met him at the Niagara Falls Comic Convention, I didn't even think to, actually, it was a couple days later after I'd actually met him that I was thinking about it so heavily, I didn't even think to mention it to him. But what was he actually saying? It's all about grammar. It's all about the context of those words, and I think he was saying to Triplett, it was a communication to Triplett, show me that your hands, and then later on, you see Victoria Hand confess, quote unquote, confess that they were Hydra. It's their coming out party, and then he grabs one of the agents and he says, "Cross off me, cross off." What did he say? Cross us off, and you cross off one of your own, which was kind of like him saying, "I'm one of yours." And he only says cross off one of your own. And I remember that Agent Simmons, actually. She kind of furrows her brow, those lovely, lovely eyebrows of hers.
Yeah.
And I think she kind of caught that, too, in story. And I've often wondered, where exactly did Triplett get all those nifty gadgets that they used at the end? There, the laser cigarette and the Herald Triumph. What was the other one? The cigarettes, of course. Which, do you remember what it said on the cigarette pack?
No.
Victory.
Oh, okay.
Victoria Hand. I think that's Triplett's quote-unquote mom. I think when they talk about parents in S.H.I.E.L.D., it's kind of code for your commanding officer. So, for example, Ward has he's got two parents. He actually says that during his lie detector test. Mm-hmm. I've really gone way off topic here from the Daniel Wade thing. I'll get back to it, though. But he says, I have two parents. And I think that means that he's got sort of two commanding officers. So he's revealed as being an undercover HYDRA agent, but he's coming back next season. And
he's
going to be involved with this. I think he's like a deep cover S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. When HYDRA broke, he just rolled with it. And basically what he's doing, he's flipping it on its ear. S.H.I.E.L.D. was infiltrated for years by HYDRA. Mm-hmm. Now, as a HYDRA agent, under Garrett and under the auspices of Agent Garrett and the whole Deathlock thing, he's trying to infiltrate HYDRA on behalf of Coulson. Because he passed that lie detector test by saying he is loyal to Coulson and the team. And I think he means it.
Yeah.
And I think his feelings for Sky, whatever they may be, I think they're genuine. And he did seem like he was trying to get Sky to understand, hey, you know, we haven't got the whole story here. We all haven't gotten the whole story.
Yeah.
So I think there's that. I think Triplett is actually being run by Hand. And I think Agent Barber, Dale Ade, who I had the good fortune to meet, and he was such a sport, too. I came up to him, you remember, I was in my full shirt and I had my gun and everything. I came up to him and I said, show me your hands. And it took him like a half second, and then it clicked, and he was like, ah. And he knew exactly what I was talking about. He saw the S.H.I.E.L.D. badge on me, and that's when he knew. He's like, all right, on. Yeah, and he got totally into it. He posed for the picture.
That was great.
So much fun with that. Hands down, I'm going to call it the second best moment I've had at Niagara Falls Convention. The best was the year before. You know it because you met him too, George Perez.
Yes. Yeah.
Definitely, that was a fine moment for me. Got him to sign my Infinity Gauntlet. Just made you yours. I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you, man.
From the other glove that I had left behind.
That's great.
You know,
thanks.
Hey, you know, obviously a Guardians fan. You're going to Fan Expo tomorrow, so I want to give you a little bit of swag there. If you see anybody worth getting to sign it, definitely go for it, you know? Like I said, try and give Michael Rooker a stink bomb with it.
That'd be
great.
Yeah.
Take it all the way back to Mallrats. That poor guy has so much bad luck with his hands.
Yeah.
Between getting it cut off on Walking Dead, getting it all smelly in Mallrats, and he plays Yondu, who in the comics loses his hand. So
yeah.
I thought that was kind of a perfect bit of... It's very inside casting. It's kind of like an inside joke almost, getting Michael Rooker, who's constantly having hand problems,
as
Yondu. So maybe we'll see him lose his hand in another movie.
Dude, I would love to meet Clark Gregg at one of these conventions. Lose it.
I had gotten Dale Ade to sign my Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. promo poster that I got, about a year and a half ago. Well before the show started, I picked up a couple of promo posters at the comic shop, and I had one pinned on my little cubicle when I was at the call center. For the longest time, too, I was one of the strongest supporters of the show before it started. And then once it did start, it was kind of, I still kept the poster up, and I said, it's going to get better. Just hang in there, people. It's going to get better. And it did.
And it did.
And it did. And now I can't wait for season two. And I've already said, you know, I want to see more Agent Barber.
Yeah.
Definitely want to see, because I want to see how this Victoria Hand thing plays out. Because I'm pretty sure that's exactly it. He's working for Victoria Hand. He's the one who gave that equipment to Triplett when they were at the dive motel close to the end there. And hopefully we're going to see more of Hand and her cadre of elite soldiers there. So I've gotten Dale Ade to sign my Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. poster. He's my first official signature on that poster, and like you say, I'd love to meet Clark Gregg. When they were asking who would you want to be at the convention next year, I said, every and or anybody from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Clark Kent on down, anybody. I would move mountains to be there for that. They had the whole cast at San Diego.
Yeah.
I wish I could have been there. They had that poster. You tagged me on that poster. Oh, what a gorgeous poster that one is.
Yeah.
I'd love to get that signed by everybody from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. That'd be awesome.
Oh, man. He seems like he'd be a nice guy to meet, too.
Tell me about it. You know, yeah. I mean, and he's married to Jennifer Grey.
Yeah.
It's so weird, you know?
Yeah.
It's like it's such an unexpected celebrity pairing. And they've been together for the longest time, too.
I mean, I keep telling Kat this. I can't get over how cool I think that guy was. And to me, before that, he was the guy from the New Adventures of Old Christine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. He's come from that. I don't know if he'd done anything else since that.
I don't know.
Between Christine and S.H.I.E.L.D., but the Marvel movies, basically. I mean, Coulson was my first experience, my first exposure to him as an actor, really.
Yeah.
First time I took notice of him. Anyway. But the funny thing is, though, sometimes you go back and watch movies, and you're like, oh my God, I didn't realize he was in that. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure at some point I'm going to go back, I'm going to find some movie, and he's going to have this tiny little dead part, and I'm going to be like, hey, look at that, it's Agent Coulson.
Well, when Iron Man 2 came out, I was like, oh, that guy is back. Not even calling him by Coulson or Clark Gregg. Oh, cool, that guy from the first movie.
He hadn't really made the impact, I think.
Yeah.
Definitely at the end credits for that one, when he finds the hammer, that's when you start to realize, okay, this guy is. He's everywhere where it's happening. This is the guy. He was in Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, Thor. Strangely absent from Captain America, but I guess they didn't want to overkill him.
Plus,
it made the scenes with them in Avengers that much more, I guess, poignant would be the word.
Yeah.
Especially considering his ultimate fate, not because in the end he ends up coming back. But it was definitely the push that they needed to, this wasn't going to work if they didn't have something to. We assume people are going to say Avenge.
I see what you did there, sir.
Like I said, I know all the lines.
Yeah.
I don't even need to think about it. But I'd love to meet Clark Gregg, any of the core cast, you know, any of the big six there, or anybody else for that matter. Victoria Hand. Oh man, how great would it be to meet Agent Garrett himself? Why is the name escaping me right now?
Bill Paxton?
Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels. Thank you. We'd do that, too. By the way, what did you think of that last scene of his on the finale? Like, he got
kind of cheesy. I kind of thought the whole last episode was a bit
cheesy. Oh, did you really?
A little bit.
Okay.
I think the real end note was the climax with the crossover with the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
I mean, they had to go out on a sort of a feel-good moment there, and it was nice that they brought in SLJ. I thought his lines were a bit corny. One man can make a difference thing. I mean, I saw what they're going with it, but at the same time, it's just like, it didn't quite hit the right note for me. It felt almost a little bit forced.
Okay.
It felt like they were just throwing everything but the kitchen sink in that last episode. They had the destroyer gun, which was great. You know, I would have liked to see more Lola.
Yeah.
I was a bit disappointed with the performance of Lola. She just really gets shot up and falls out of the plane, out of the bus, and just a hard landing, and that's it. And you never saw anything from Lola ever since. It was really just sort of just background, just part of the window dressing.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to see more of that, because I mean, the flying car has always been an integral part of the S.H.I.E.L.D. It's always Nick Fury's signature mode of transportation.
Yeah.
So hopefully she'll be back, Lola. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully she gets those suspension fixed up after the Valley incident.
Yeah.
Outside of the Ritz-Carlton, I think it was?
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny how they crash in front of this really fancy hotel, and then at the end of the same episode, they're in the dive motel. The literal. You see the fluorescent light.
Yeah.
Actually, somebody diving, so that's how you know it was a dive motel. That was a cute scene.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll see more Lola. If not, maybe some other cars. And maybe even something an earlier car, you see the first flying car we saw, of course, was in Captain America, Howard Stark. Obviously, he is the... this is based on repulsor tech. That's we've seen this again, Stark tech in Captain America with Alan Carriers. But yeah, hopefully we'll see maybe an old Ensel or something flying around in Agent Carter.
That'd be possible. Great.
Hopefully he'll perfect that technology that wasn't quite working at the beginning of Captain America First Avenger.
Yeah.
I did say a few years, he said, so.
Yeah.
But it's, Lola is a 1953 or 63? 63. 63 Corvette, so that's another reason why I would love to see Agent Carter skip decades and get to the 60s, because then we could see the origin of Lola.
That'd be great.
Yeah, seriously, the car has a personality and is as much a character and much a part of the show as anything else, I think, or the Marvel Universe. Or other cars, like I say. I mean, why not? Other vehicles. Let's see. I guess there's no halo carriers at the moment. They're in the playground. Patton Oswalt. I loved him. He was great.
Yeah,
there's another actor I would love to meet, and he would get a signature on my, that's what I would plunk in front of him if I had the opportunity. any of those little cameos, the famous people who've shown up, like Patton Oswalt,
yeah.
Jamie Alexander, Sif herself, that's a cool one.
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't know who else has been on the show. And the thing is, there were so many sort of like little origin stories in the first half of the first season. Graviton.
Yes.
Blizzard, I think, was the one there from the Seeds episode. So he's got those ice powers. So you know that there's definitely a couple of characters who maybe you didn't think very much of in the first season. They're going to come back, and hopefully they're going to come back in a big way and really incorporate. I mean, we're going to have, like, Crusher Creel, the Absorbing Man. It'd be great if we had, like, a Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
It also had sort of Asgardian origins. I think Crusher Creel. It was a Loki that gave him like an Asgardian flower, and that's what gave him the power to absorb things. So we've seen Asgard intermingle with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. already, so it'd be cool to see if that is how Absorbing Man is actually created, or what his origin is, or if it's just something completely different. You can figure it's got to be something sort of out there and spectacular, though.
Yeah.
This is the Marvel Universe. Gosh, I don't even know what else. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there's a whole bunch of people there I'd love to meet. Hopefully there will be some kind of, at least even just a limited panel next year, even at Fan Expo.
Yeah.
I was kind of disappointed not to see. I mean, it's great that there's as many people from Guardians of the Galaxy in attendance. Too bad about Karen Gillan. But
yeah.
Like I said, at least you've got four other people who are officially in the movie. Stan Lee, Nathan Fillion, Dave Bautista, and Michael Rooker himself, and Yondu, an actual Guardian, one of the original Guardians.
Yes.
So that's kind of cool. So you still got two Guardians that are showing up. You know what? I'll confess something right now. One of the things I didn't like about Guardians of the Galaxy was Nebula.
Okay.
I kind of found her a bit shrill and annoying. She was, I don't know, she kind of grated on my nerves. But maybe that was the point. Maybe that's exactly what the character is. There was another observation that I was going to make was, it seems to be a proper title, The Daughters of Thanos, which I thought was very interesting because, Gamora is an adopted daughter of Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
This is established for years in the comic books. Nebula was actually in the comics always rumored to be his granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
So they sort of cleaned up the family history there by just making them the daughters of Thanos. I would presume that neither one of them are actually related to him in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But the title itself, The Daughters of Thanos, they sort of, and there was that hint that there was more than one, more than the two of them, too.
Mm-hmm.
Nebula says that, of all the daughters of Thanos, you are the one that I hated the least, or the one that I didn't hate the most, or something like that. So it implies that there's other strong, deadly female characters out there that will probably be introduced in another Guardians movie. But in the absence of a Galactus and a Silver Surfer, it almost seems like the Daughters of Thanos is a title almost equivalent to the Heralds of Galactus. It almost sounds like this is the Marvel Cinematic Universe's version of Galactus, is Thanos, this ever-present threat getting closer and closer to Earth, essentially. And that these are his heralds, his daughters, basically, these killer females that he sends out to do his bidding. So that's kind of what I took away from that, was that this was sort of this was their repurpose, because they couldn't use the Heralds of Galactus, because they can't use a Silver Surfer or a Fire Lord, a Terax the Tamer. I would love to see these characters.
Oh, yeah.
I really hope that Fantastic Four goes that route. I think the success of Guardians of the Galaxy is going to put a lot. It's going to push Fantastic Four into, I think it's actually, I mean, because they say that it's going to be sharing the same universe as the X-Men.
Yep.
So hopefully it's going to be sort of that cosmic movie to X-Men, as Guardians is to the Avengers and the Avengers franchise and all the heroes, Iron Man, Thor, Captain America. So hopefully we'll see that with Fantastic Four. We'll see the Skrulls. I'm assuming because they've got the X-Men characters, they'll probably have the Shi'ar.
Yeah.
Starjammers are always a possibility.
Yeah.
And it would be really cool for all those, because that's the one thing that really irked me and bugged me about Fantastic Four being in Fox's hands, was the fact that there's so much associated with Fantastic Four that Marvel can't touch. What's interesting is that, you know, the first appearance of Ronan the Accuser was in Fantastic Four.
Oh, okay.
It was actually the issue before the first appearance of Adam Warlock, when he was him.
Oh, okay.
It was also in a Fantastic Four issue. I've got the Essential. It's actually the first three issues are Ronan the Accuser and then the Adam Warlock stories. And I was just like, and yet because they're so fully associated, especially Ronan, because of the pre-Skrull War, mm-hmm. and the Kree in general, basically, are so tied to the Marvel cinematic, the Marvel Universe and Avengers. I guess that's why they got their rights to that. It's a shame that we can't see a Kree-Skrull War because Skrulls are tied up with Fantastic Four. But that's why I would love to see all the universes come together, you know? Phil Coulson jumping through universes, tying it all together, gluing it all together, doing
fantastic.
What DC could never do, bring it all together. That would be awesome. But maybe just outside the realm of thought. But hey, you know, as far as this, at this point, anything's possible with Marvel. Frankly, I think they can do just about anything, and they would be able to pull it off. I'm not going to say that they can do no wrong, as they have in the past.
Well, yeah, a little bit.
But at this point, I think they've definitely got a solid writing staff. They know where they're going, and they definitely have a story to tell. And because you're not just watching a single movie and saying, well, that was kind of great. You know, it was okay. Or maybe that wasn't so great. It's not like you can just say, huh, okay, well, whatever. Because it's all tied into a bigger story. They're all just really chapters. It's almost like billion-dollar television episodes. And Kevin Feige is the showrunner, and he's just basically, these are just episodes that are put out once or twice a year, every 6 months or so. So, I don't know. They might not do as well as other movies. Ant-Man is a big question mark right now.
Yeah.
You know, Edgar Wright dropping out. You know, so there was a bit of production. You know, are they going to be able to pull it off? Are they going to be able to film it, get it all done before this announced release date? We'll see. We'll see how it turns out.
Definitely.
Seems like it's got a solid cast, though. Paul Rudd. Yeah. Anything he's in, I love.
Yeah.
I love his comedy work. I can't say I've really seen much in the way of drama from him.
Yeah, me neither.
Supergirl role would be a different change for him. I'm okay with that. I could see him as a bit of a ne'er-do-well Scott Lang Ant-Man. Sure.
Why not?
And it's going to open up so much possibilities to him.
Yeah.
What if he's been running around in all these movies in tiny, tiny form? And what if we actually see scenes from other movies, but from a different angle, from a very small, from an inch-high angle, you know, from an almost microcosmic angle?
Hadn't thought of that.
And, hey, there's another Guardian of the Galaxy bug.
Yeah.
Originally from Micronauts.
Yeah.
And, hey, you can shrink down to a microverse now, you know, once you introduce PIM particles, it really opens up universes within universes, not just outside, but now a microcosm. A macrocosm, a microcosm. Doctor Strange is going to introduce different dimensions. Hopefully Black Panther and Captain Marvel both explore their respective universes. Wakanda, I think, is something that needs to be looked at. This is where the vibranium came from. For Cap Shield, this was the only vibranium that Howard Stern said he had. Whether or not that vibranium has something to do with the shrapnel in Tony's chest, and whether it's related to the Infinity Gems, who knows? It seems to be taking hyper shots without any difficulty.
Yeah.
Everything else got, well, let's assume that it was teleported, because now we know that's what the Tesseract does.
Yeah.
Red Skull's not dead. He's just someplace else. Everybody got shot by one of his weapons is dead. They're just someplace else. Although maybe floating dead in space, who knows?
Yeah.
There were a couple of characters in the first Cap movie. I remember the Nazis who wanted to shut him down. They said the Red Skull has been indulged enough.
Yeah.
There was a line, actually, if you remember, the Red Skull described himself as not being rewarded with this place, but the compound that he had there in the mountains. It wasn't a reward. It was an exile, he said. And if you remember from Captain America, there were the Exiles, which were a couple of former Nazis, four or five of them,
okay.
who were exiled to an island. by the Red Skull or by the Nazis back. And this was this actually tied into the Cosmic Cube and the introduction of Falcon back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
So I think when he shot all those Nazis, we all assumed at the time that they had been disintegrated. I think what they were actually done was transported. Who knows where?
Yeah.
Maybe Thanos' dungeon. Who knows where they are? But whatever. Red Skull disappeared at the end, and I think at some point I would love to see a death of Captain America, but not an actual death of Captain America, a disappearance of Captain America.
Oh, okay.
Because that's how death of Captain America kind of played out in the comics. He didn't actually die, because he came back, obviously. He was thrown into time, and he was bouncing around. But what if he just gets shot by a Hydra weapon and he disappears, and everybody just assumes that he's dead? Now, he knows, because at the end of Avengers, he was looking at the Tesseract, and I remember there's a look on Cap's face, and he's just like, wait, so if this thing transports people to another part of space, then the Red Skull isn't dead. You could actually see the wheels turning in his head. You know, he had the look on his face, and it's actually this wonderful little Easter egg. So he kind of knows that the Red Skull is still out there. Whether or not Hugo Weaving reprises the role would be nice. Apparently he says he doesn't want to do it.
No.
But, I mean, realistically, you could get anybody in that makeup. He did a wonderful job. I'd love to see him do it again, but if he's not willing, they'll get somebody else, and they'll make sure that it's a good fit.
Yeah, they'll pull a Rhodey.
Exactly, yeah. They'll pull a Rhodey, they'll pull a Ruffalo.
Yeah.
They'll get somebody in there who wants the role, who will do it, do it justice. Although, he was, like I said, he was a great Red Skull. Way better than that Italian one from the
movies. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, less said about that than
I
about.
Well, dude, I hate to cut you off, but we've gone way over.
You could probably split this into two.
I think we'll probably do that. But,
part one and part two.
It was awesome talking the movies with you again.
Any other thoughts? We can do a part three anytime you like, you know?
I'm thinking maybe after a few episodes of season two of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Blu-ray will be out, so we'll get a good chance to see all the extra features on that. No one shot there either, unfortunately.
No.
The extra features on Captain America, I think this will all probably be worth talking about. I'm
hoping. Definitely.
A rewatch after the Blu-ray release, for sure. And, Agents will be starting up season two.
We'll
probably have more news about Agent Carter, more news about Age of Ultron, hopefully more news about pending movies coming off in the future, maybe a concrete date for Black Panther or Captain Marvel.
Nice.
These are the movies that keep getting bounced around.
Yeah.
And of course, my boy Doctor Strange, can't wait for that one.
We should have some casting maybe
sounds
by the next time.
Joaquin Phoenix, I just heard about this, he's in final talks, so we'll see if that works.
Alright.
I can see him as Doctor Strange. We're talking about, you wonder about this casting and whether it's going to fit.
Yeah.
I loved him as Johnny Cash. So, I'm willing to give him a chance.
All right, man. Well, thanks again. And we'll talk to you next time. Take care.
Thanks for listening. To hear more We Got the Geek, check us out at www.wegotthegeek.com and on iTunes.